Hey there, you're very welcome to episode 7 of Triton Lake Perform. My name is Connor Smith, founder and CEO of Triton Lake, a marketplace that intelligently connects allocators with differentiated alternative investment opportunities. In 2021, Triton Lake became the title sponsor of the Ireland men's and women's rugby sevens teams. The two teams recently competed at the Rugby World Cup Sevens in Cape Town, with the men's team securing a historic bronze medal at the tournament. Triton Lake Perform explores the intersections of sport and business, looking at what both worlds can learn from each other and what are the key parts to the puzzle of high performance. In the first few episodes, we heard from a range of high-performance professionals, from Billy Dardis and Lucy Mulhall, Irish Sevens captains, to Ronan O'Gara, the head coach of La Rochelle. Today, for our final episode of this season, we're delighted to be joined by Niamh Briggs, Grand Slam champion and former captain of the Irish national rugby team. After a hugely successful playing career, Niamh is now the assistant coach of the current women's national rugby team in Ireland. Niamh, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Maybe to start, take us through your journey from a GAA player starting rugby at a late stage right up to captaining one of the most successful Irish rugby sides we've had.
Yeah, look, it's been a really cool journey, I suppose. I was sports mad from a very, very young age. My parents were very much into sports. My brothers were older than me and, you know, I was kind of the tag along for a very long time. And my dad's job moved us around a lot when we were younger. We lived in like five different counties before I was finished primary school, and sport was my way of making friends. And I was quite shy as a child, and sport was that one thing that allowed me to kind of probably have that imposter syndrome where you can pretend to make friends and be very sociable while, you know, and it became a real important kind of lifeboat for me almost. But we settled in Abbeyside, and just outside Dungarvan in Waterford, when I was just in fifth class, the end of fifth class, and we've been there since, so that's been our longest stint. And I just threw myself into everything, so started playing GAA very quickly. And when I went to secondary school, St. Augustine's College, it was renowned for producing really quality sports people, mostly in athletics and GAA. So that's kind of it, really. I started playing football in Camogie there, and was played with Waterford from under 14 the whole way up to senior. And they were really good learnings for me, because it's probably my first foray into probably a competitive side of sport. And probably where I got most of my friends from, for example. So it was really, really like important for me in my development, constantly playing sport. And then when I went to college in Waterford, I started playing rugby for a bit. And within about 8 months, I'd been capped for Ireland. So it was a pretty steep learning curve very quickly. And to be honest, I haven't really looked back, to be honest.
What did the other half person have to do if they lost
the match? They had to come and play GAA. Okay. We were both stuck for numbers within our home club and stuff. So, okay. But it was it. I was hooked, line and sinker. I think my dad had been really into rugby, and he'd played for like Clonmel and Galway Regents and stuff when we had been living there. And I remember just being on the sidelines all the time, be it in GAA or rugby. And I struggled at GAA to find a place. I think I was from a small village that, you know, Waterford GAA was very dominant by certain clubs, and I wasn't really a part of that club. So I kind of struggled throughout my underage career and senior career to probably find a comfortable spot where I felt like I could be myself. I think the minute I started rugby, I don't know what it was, whether it was a game for everybody or the accepting nature or the social side of the sport where everybody is, you know, really welcoming, I found it very quickly. And from that day on, it just became, you know, an obsession almost, in terms of, you know, I wanted to be the best very quickly. I didn't have that in GAA because I felt like I was constantly trying to fit in, whereas I didn't think I had that in rugby.
With rugby, okay. And we'll come back to your time as a player, but maybe to bring us up to date, tell us a little bit about the appointment and with assistant coach.
Yeah, so I've been coaching for the last few years since I retired playing rugby, and very quickly I realised that as much as I loved playing, I way prefer to coach. I prefer to see development in players. I prefer to build relationships, because I was very intense as a player, and I felt like I didn't really build good relationships when I was playing with with everybody. I think I was just very competitive, and yet when I was coaching, I got a huge amount of satisfaction of trying to build relationships with people, but also watching people develop and get better all the time. So I had been coaching with my club in UL Bowes and a little bit with Munster when Greg McWilliams called and Anthony Eddy and offered me a position, you know, as a backs coach, assistant coach with Greg, and like that's almost like dreams, like, you know what I mean. So I just literally jumped at it. I couldn't believe it, and it's been a tough year. I'm not going to tell you it hasn't. It's been challenging from a coaching point of view when you're trying to learn on the job, and but it's been great. I've really, really enjoyed it.
And you're just back from Japan, obviously, as well. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, look, it was incredible. It was 3 weeks. I think it was incredible. Obviously, we get to go away and we get to experience culture like Japan. But I think more importantly from that, I think it was the fact that we got to remain together as a group for that amount of time. It's never really happened. We've never been touring before as a women's squad. So that was incredible because we got to know each other very well. And it's very different to Six Nations where you're popping in and out for 3 or 4 days. This was literally 3 and a bit weeks together. And I think you start to find people's vulnerabilities, their strengths, their weaknesses. You start to understand people better. The relationships become stronger. That rapport gets, you know, more developed. And I think that alone meant that, irrelevant of what happened on the pitch, that this was going to be a winning tour. You know, we had so many young players coming. We capped 9 new players. And when you do something like that in that small space of time, the results of the games don't really come into your thinking of how successful or unsuccessful the tour has been afterwards. I think from an education point of view, we learned what high performance was, we learned what backing up sessions were. We learned as a coaching group about our players and they learned about us. And I have to say, like, having played with Ireland for so long, this was probably one of the most enjoyable groups I ever got to work with, both as a playing or a coaching group. I thought they were super to be great crack. And you just didn't mind whose company you were in every day. And yeah, I think that's probably, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Maybe let's go back to your days as a player. And you touched on it a little bit there in terms of your competitive nature. But captaining a national side comes with a lot of responsibility as well. How did you manage it and balance that with your own performance as a player?
Yeah, I struggled with that. I think I definitely didn't think I got the best out of myself as a player, as a captain, and vice versa. I don't think the players got the best out of me as a captain, because I was still quite insecure as a player in relation to my confidence and wanting to probably continue to improve. Captaincy came at a time when we had lost a huge amount of big personalities after that 2014 World Cup, and we were trying to fill that void. And I think rather than seek the group and try and make sure that you wanted to like include them in everything that you were doing, I think I tried to protect them from, you know, things that were happening off the pitch at the time. And also I kind of didn't understand that a captain is somebody that shares leadership, it shares things. And so I think if I had that time again, I definitely think I would have done it a bit differently. And I think on the flip of that, you know, I think all that stress, probably I took it on my shoulders way too much, and then probably didn't get the best out of me as a player.
In terms of the world of women's rugby, obviously it's developed and changed a lot over the years, but how did you sidestep the challenges around work-life balance, remaining motivated as an amateur player, inequities versus male players, in order to continue again with that high performance bit and making sure that you got the best out of yourself?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think when you're in it, you don't really think about it. You don't go backwards or think about what you have or don't have. I think when I was in it, you just wanted to be the best player in the world. And if that took, you know, training 5 mornings at 5 o'clock in the morning, I was going to do it. I didn't really mind. I think it's when you step away from it, you understand that probably work-life balance was probably a little bit unhealthy, because I went from work to rugby and that was it, to be honest. And in relation to the work thing, look, I was a guard in Limerick and they were incredibly supportive and have been throughout my rugby career. So they made it very easy for me to be able to train and to commit to probably that competitiveness or that high performance lifestyle. And but yeah, I do think we all did it and you didn't complain about it, because that was the norm at the time. You know,
you enjoyed it, I guess. And
absolutely,
that's what you wanted to be
and
doing.
And we were so successful, yeah. You know, yeah. What I mean? We had won Grand Slam in 2013. We'd done really well in 2014 at the World Cup. We'd won Six Nations in 2015. So you don't question anything. But I think now when you look at it on the flip side, would I have changed anything? Absolutely not. I loved every minute of it. So, you know, I'd I used to drive me insane when we talk about choices and sacrifices. And in my mind, we made a choice to go and be the best team we could be.
With what was available to you.
We didn't have to sacrifice a huge amount because we got so much reward from it.
In terms of the sevens, I mean, tell us a little bit about your time there. I mean, obviously, we're very close to what's going on in the sevens world, but I'd love to get a few of your favourite memories and what skills were you able to transfer from those times to 15s?
Yeah, so I went into sevens for a period of time, took a period of leave from the Guards in 2015, Six Nations, and tried to qualify for Rio. And so I went to live in Dublin for a chunk of about 12 weeks, and it was incredible. I really enjoyed it. The training was unbelievable. I never experienced anything like it. And it gave me a lot of admiration for all those players that had been training for a good few years at that. And clearly you're working on your skills every day, so you're getting that. But it was more of a case of it's such a small, tight-knit group. You become very integrated very quickly because there's only so few of you. Whereas, you know, at 15s, there could be 30 girls of training, whereas this was quite different and quite unique. And I loved the fact that they pushed each other every day. Lucy Mulhall, I know she's captain now, but she was captain back then. And I learned a huge amount from her in terms of how she dealt with people and how she pushed herself to extreme levels of training that I thought I trained hard before. And then I went up and trained with her, and she was incredible. I learned a huge amount over those 12 weeks. It was incredible. We didn't, unfortunately, qualify for Rio, but I came away out of that at the time thinking if any young player had come up to me and said, look, I've an opportunity to go in there, I fully back it, because I think it had so much, it was worth so much. It was worth weight in gold in relation to the fact that you're a full-time player almost, but you're working on those core skills that transfer so much to 15s every day. So it was brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
And playing in an environment where there's nowhere to hide with those skills as well.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So, obviously, that sevens programme has been going from strength to strength. Where do you see the key benefits to Irish rugby in general of sevens? And it plays different roles for the men's game and the women's game. And for the women's game, I think it's a great shop window to attract people that might be playing other sports to come in. Obviously, you have the carrot of an Olympics there as well, right? But we obviously believe in it. What do you see in terms of its role?
Oh, I think, hugely. I think what I love about it is that it's very important to women's rugby in Ireland, more so than the men. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that we are continuing to try and build a player base that can compete at international level at both codes, and we need both codes at the moment because we don't have enough players playing. I think when you look back at last year's Six Nations and you look at the likes of, you know, Eve and Stacey and Lucy and Brittany coming into that 15s environment, they were incredible. They were a dream to coach because they're used to that high performance, and but also how they fit into the group as well. And we've found a way to, as in terms of the RFU and Irish rugby, we found a way to be able to manage both. And I think we've just got to cut out the outside noise in relation to what people think. And I think that's so important because we know the value that we have for both codes. And I don't think we're in a position at the moment to be able to split the two in a way that other countries can, because the playing base is quite small. And those girls that come into that go between that sevens and 15s environment, they bring a huge amount of value. And I think that it would be, you know, it would be remiss of me to turn around and say that, oh, you know, it's one or the other. It's not. They bring a huge amount of value to both codes. So why would we not use our best players? So,
They want to play for the 15s as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, I think the programs aligning themselves have been brilliant. And I think Greg coming in and working with Aidan and now Gillian being that head of high performance is like such a brilliant team to visibly get excited about where this program can go, because I can see like the people that are working in it, like, you know, Gemma Crowley, Emer Flannery, they have women's rugby at their forefront, and hopefully we can be successful.
No, absolutely, it's great to hear. Maybe spend a couple of minutes on injuries. And, you know, injuries, you know, they take a toll on your body, but on the mind as well. How did you deal with the injuries that you had throughout your career? mentally as well, I guess, right?
Yeah, look, I'm probably still going through my hip replacement in June, so I'm getting to the end of those operations, I hope. But look, I think for a long time, you know, I was able to deal with them very well because I always had a carrot to come back to. I think that was always really important for me. So that would drive me to be better. And I remember speaking to Felix Jones at the time in relation to when I picked up quite a big injury, I would be rehabbing away at Munster. And one day I caught him and I asked him, look, will we go through some back three stuff? And he had an incredible mind. Obviously, now he's coaching at a really high level. So he said to me that injuries are just, you know, obviously part and parcel of the game, but they're also a way for us to get better. And I was kind of looking at him and he said, well, you can do a huge amount of visual work and a huge amount of video work and you can get better at your catch pass if it's a lower limb injury, or you can get better at upper body strength if it, you know what I mean? So I was like, thought that was, you know, so that was really something that drove me. The injury leading into the 2017 World Cup absolutely broke me both physically and mentally. It took me a very, very long time to get over that, because that in my mind was going to be, you know, captain of a home World Cup. It's going to be my swan song. I'm retiring at the end of this. I felt like we had a really good group of players, and I had missed the whole season because I had a really bad hamstring injury off the bone, and I'd worked so hard to get back to being in that World Cup squad, and then obviously 10 days beforehand tore my Achilles. And no words can ever do that justice. I think I spent a lot of time by myself, became very introverted, even more so. I think I tried to process information myself without thinking I could do it all by myself, and I couldn't. It took me a very, very long time to get over it. And I came back to play in 2018, and that's like a regret. I should never have. I wasn't in the right place mentally or physically. I would argue that Six Nations for me was a bit of a car crash, and that was the last time I played rugby for Ireland. And on the flip of it, you know, did I want to go out in an injury? I didn't, but I needed to put myself in a better position to be able to represent them. And the fallout from it and everything of not going to plan, I think I just took that on my shoulders a huge amount and found it really difficult, and it took a long time for me to get on the back of it. It took nearly 2 years to kind of fall back in love with rugby again.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you, you know, did you learn a lot about yourself? But I think maybe a better question would be, what advice would you give to someone that's in that same situation? I mean, if you were to, it sounds like you'd do it, you'd mindset wise do it slightly differently.
Yeah, I wouldn't have locked myself away in a room. Yeah. I definitely would have been a lot more open, I think, to my family, especially, or my friends, and probably wouldn't have suffered in silence. I think that burden was just, the stress of it afterwards was huge, and I locked myself away for a very long time. I didn't want to talk to people. I didn't want to look at rugby, and it's weird because I am literally rugby obsessed, as in the people that I live with are like this morning I said to my housemate at 6:30 in the morning, because I was up and she was going to work, and I said, can I ask you a question about rugby? And she was like, absolutely not, it's like 6:30 in the morning. So it's like, but I had to, you know, for about 2 or 3 years, I fell very much out of love with it, and it was very much a chore for me to do anything with it. And I don't think I really got the love back for it until I started coaching.
And yeah, so that's, let's think about that and that transition. What drove the decision? I mean, if you were out of love with rugby, what made you want to go coaching, I guess, right?
So I came back playing for one season because I didn't want to, I was very much on my own, I wanted to go on my own terms, and I wanted to get back playing to a level that I knew I could rest my mind easy. So like the previous 2 years have been so injury ridden and have been so poor that there was something inside of me that was burning to go, okay, you've got to get back, but you've got to get back and play well. So you've got to get your body fit, your mind fit. So I put in a really good club season towards the end of 2018-19, and put in a really big summer of training and got back really like playing well for Munster. And that was my big thing. So I put in a really, really good pre-season. And then the first game, I had a really bad leg break, ankle dislocation against Ulster. And I've never ran since that time. So that was a really difficult time from that point of view. But also I actually was way more at peace with that because I knew I had got back to the level. Like my dad had said in that game, like, you are back, like, so that was enough for me. That's all I needed. I didn't need any more affirmation after that. And then thinking I would get back from that injury at the club, Fiona Hayes was coaching you, I both at the time, asked me would I help out with the backs, and I was like, yeah, absolutely. And very quickly I started to go down a rabbit hole of coaching and asking people about coaching and trying to learn the trade, because I knew rugby, but coaching's very different and you're almost teaching. And, you know, to try and get what I wanted and my message to translate to players on the pitch, that was a really big challenge for me at the start. And also stuff like walking into a group and talking to people. So when you're togged out, it's really easy to literally go, come on, like we can do this, or start talking to people about what you're doing on the pitch. When you're standing there with a whistle and a jacket and walk into a middle and everybody's looking at you, you're a bit like, I found that really difficult. I found it really difficult to walk into a room of people I didn't know. And that's something that I forced myself to do in Ireland, just to make sure that I go and greet every player, because that's out of my comfort zone and you're expecting them to come out of theirs. I've got to go and meet them halfway. And that was it. I just caught the bug and literally started like plaguing people within Munster Rugby. And any days I had off from the guards, I was down like watching their training sessions, trying to take as many notes and observations as I could, and started then coaching both full time in terms of head coach there. And then last year coached Munster, and this year as well, the women's team. So it's been a really busy journey, but it's been one that I absolutely loved. Like, as in, I feel like I'm only tipping the iceberg of where I can go coaching wise, and I get very excited. I'm very passionate about it.
It's great though.
And I can't wait to see what next.
And in terms of, tell us maybe just a little bit about your role in the Ireland setup. Where do you focus? Is it mostly on the backs?
Yeah, so yeah. Mostly on the backs, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was very overwhelmed when I went in there at the start. I'm like, let's call it a spade, I didn't open my mouth for the first 2 weekends of training, because I was very much like kind of doubting myself about whether I should have been there. And and I think that, you know, the time over the Six Nations and this tour of Japan, it definitely, like, I was definitely a better coach by the time we got to that summer program. I'm sure now, hopefully going forward, you know, I'll be a better coach for whatever role happens next. And that's really important to me, is that I'm continuing to grow and grow. But I look after the backs, yeah, and I love it. I think we have so much young talent there, it's scary. And when you look at, you know, the strength and depth that we're starting to create now within Ireland and Irish women's rugby, it's just really exciting about where this can go.
No, absolutely. Talk us maybe just finishing up a few questions on the coaching aspect of it. How would you say your coaching style is? Are you getting in and throwing the ball around? Are you standing back a little bit and talking to the players? Obviously, you've touched on the piece around building that relationship with them, which is obviously very important to you, right? Mm. When it comes down to the actual skills, are you getting hands on as well?
Oh yeah, as in I'm definitely in the middle of them. I think it changes, because with club you're dealing with players who have international experience, but also players who never played rugby before. So there's like a huge difference in relation to the skill level. So you've got to make sure that you can cater for those levels. And I think as you go up then towards Munster and Ireland, definitely you become more honed in on certain skills and what, you know, how you can get better, because the time that you have on the ball at international rugby is so much different than the time that you have on the ball at AIL. And you've got to make sure that you're putting players under pressure and making sure that you're making them so uncomfortable at training at an Irish level that when they go and play a match, it's easier, kind of a thing.
And just on that point, maybe just tease it out a bit more. Your mentality and preparation for games, how does that differ as a coach and as a player? It sounds like you put yourself under a lot of pressure as a player. Are you trying to manage that a bit better with players now?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think you get to a stage, and for the first year, I was a ball of nerves going into a match. But like, you've got to trust that you've done enough, or you've done as much as you can in relation to coaching, that you've empowered players to make decisions on the pitch. I think for the first time, you know, for the first year of coaching, you'd have often heard me on the pitch almost trying to get them to like make the decisions for them. I think for Irish women's rugby, we've got to get better at being able to see the game and understanding where space is, and they can only do that by making mistakes and by kind of figuring it out themselves. Yeah, you can give them enough information and certain information, but I think for me now as a coach, I think it's important that you trust the players and empower them to be able to make their own decisions and mistakes on the pitch. And you can talk about the repercussions and consequences of that afterwards.
When you do the analysis,
yeah,
exactly.
But yeah. So I think that's definitely a huge learning for me in relation to that kind of stuff. But I like to bring energy as a coach, so you'll definitely hear me shouting something at the sideline, but it probably won't be, you know.
It'll be encouragement, yes, as opposed to you should have passed there.
Yeah, basically.
The game obviously has changed a lot outside what's going on around the pitch and in the rest of the world around it. But have you seen the game itself change much since you played as a player?
Oh, night and day. Like, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if I'd make it now as a player in terms of calibre of player that's in Ireland now is so, so good. Those young girls that are coming through, their training ages, like, they've all been playing rugby since they were 8 and 9. I didn't start rugby till I was in my 20s. And so, yeah, look, 100%. I think the game is evolving all the time. I think the skill level is getting better. The intensity of which the club game is starting to play at, you know, is getting better. It definitely needs to improve in order for us to see the benefits of that at international stage. But it's getting better. You see better kickers. You see better, you know, in terms of the scrum, the line out, it's becoming more efficient. And that's the big thing. We've got to continue to grow and develop because we're not where we are need to be in from terms of a club level or international stage. But we've got to make sure that we continue to develop and grow in a way that allows it to be sustainable. So we don't want 10 new players to come in and be brilliant and then those 10 players to retire and then all of a sudden we've nothing coming up underneath it. So we've got to continue to create those pathways and drive the game that way, and so that when a player retires or gets injured, or that what's coming in is as good there. And the men's team is a perfect, and I know it's very different because they're full-time professional and they've been together for a huge amount of time, and like lads that are playing Junior Cup now are like semi-professionals in terms of how they prepare. But we've got to continue to push that level, that competitiveness within the squad to be able to push the level outside of it. So I think it's definitely going the right way.
It's going the right way. I think the training age point is a good one as well, right? And there's a lot of misnomers about those conversations around women's sports and training ages and everything else. So, but you can see the impact of it.
Just look at that tour to Japan and you see those 7 or 8 girls that they'd all just been doing their leaving cert. I was like, oh my goodness. But they'd all been playing for a very long time. And it's not that they're, you know, that they're completely ready to go and play international senior rugby. It's not that. It's the fact that they pick things up really quickly. Mm. So you can say something to them and they get it. Whereas there's players that, you know, are new to the game and they're 19, 20, 21. It takes them a little longer, and I think at international rugby we just don't have that time because we don't have that time together. So players that can pick things up really quickly, you know, you can go to another level with them in terms of the detail, and that then brings us to another level. So yeah, look, I just think it's so important.
No, absolutely. Obviously we had the 43 professional contracts announced there recently. How did it feel to see that being announced for someone that's dedicating so much of your life to the game?
Yeah, it was huge, buzzing, to be honest. I thought it was brilliant. I think that coupled with Gillian's appointment was huge for me. I think somebody that's I admire hugely from when I worked with her in the sevens, and coming in, you just know that she's going to be brilliant at what she does. But underneath that, then, you know, it's the group that is there in terms of Greg and Gemma and Aidan and Emer. That's a really good working group to be able to get the best out of what's coming behind or underneath that in terms of those contracts. And well, look, I don't know what that looks like. I'm sure we'll find out over the next few weeks. But whatever that looks like, I feel like this is just the starting point for something new, a huge new era within women's rugby. And I feel like for the last few years, we've been constantly saying that we're in a building phase. And that drives me insane. We've got to get out of that building phase now. And I think this is a brilliant opportunity. And I think what's most exciting about it is the opportunities that can come out of it, because you're building something from scratch is so cool. I think that when you can say, you know, for those people that like the likes of the Gillians and these lads, their legacy can be this program, and like
it's huge.
That's huge.
Yeah. We're wrapping up our first season of Triton Lake Perform today. If you think back, Niamh, of over the last 12 months of rugby, sevens, 15s, men's and women's, what would you pick out maybe as your highlight or two of that year?
I think, look, obviously the groundbreaking win in New Zealand was huge for the men's squads. And on the flip of that, that Japan tour, I think that's going to be huge for this group going forward. I think we can't underestimate the education and the knowledge that we gain both as coaches but as players as well, and understanding, you know, I said it before, but what that high performance element is and the ability to be able to back sessions up every day, like that is crucial in order for us to be able to continue to get better, to be able to go and compete with the likes of those Englands and the Frances. So yeah, look, I definitely do think they're definitely my two highlights from this year.
Perfect. Niamh, it's been great to chat to you today. We gained some really fantastic insights into the workings of Irish rugby and your experiences as a player and a coach. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with Triton Lake Perform. Huge congratulations on a fantastic career on and off the pitch, and good luck with your future coaching endeavours.
Thanks a million. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. So that's a wrap on the first season of Triton Lake Perform. Huge thank you to all of the guests who have joined us over the course of this season, and to you, the listener. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back with season 2's lineup of guests very soon.